dare say. Well, thank you very much, Pat, for coming in to see us this afternoon and to sit this interview with us. Could you start by giving your name?
My name is Patricia Kent.
And describing how you came to work in the grain industry.
I took an INTO course at the Clon College. It was called Introduction to Non-Traditional Occupations. And we were sent on different places, you know, for training, like on-the-job training. And I chose to go to the elevator. I wanted the inspection staff, but they were all filled up, so then I ended up going on the way staff. And that was in 1982. And they were laying off that year, was in the fall of the year. In 83, they didn't hire. And in 84, they were hiring, so I put an application in and got hired on.
Did you have any family connection to the grain trade?
No, none whatsoever.
So this was, what attracted you to the grain industry?
I guess the buildings themselves, I was always, they were so mystery buildings, you know, they were so big and so huge, you know, and I just wondered what went on there, and they were always all on the waterfront kind of type thing. They weren't throughout the city, you know, so.
Sure. And you worked there then from more full-time in 1984. You worked then until?
No, I worked like it was casual, well, which would be part-time mostly, like 3 months on, 3 months off, you know. And then 1 year I didn't get called at all because it went on the amount of grain that was being shipped.
Yes.
You know, when Chernobyl blew up in 1982, what year was that? I mean, we worked, I think, 30 days with no day off. Everybody was just so exhausted, you know, because they had to get that grain out, and Russia was buying everything, old tough barley and tough grain, you know.
You were coming into the trade, in fact, into the industry, about the time that things began to slow down on the waterfront.
That's right.
I was elected as a member of Parliament in 84, and I remember Frank Mazur, who was the president of the grain handlers, talking about maybe 1,800 grain handlers on the waterfront. And
that's right.
These days, if there are 180 working, I think they're doing pretty well. So it's been an incredible decline in employment.
Oh, I've seen lots of elevators close down, yes.
Yes.
And when I started on the Grain Commission, there was 169 alone people on the way staff. And when I left there a year ago in January, there was 22, 24 people left.
Really?
That's it, yeah.
The rest had retired or actually been laid off?
Well, the job changed.
Yes.
I mean, things we used to have to do then, we didn't have to do, you know, coming on now. Like, we used to have boxcars.
We'll talk about those kinds of changes that took place over the years.
Lots of changes.
So you retired in January of 09.
Yes.
So it makes it about 25 years. Well, 27, I guess, starting back in, if one takes it back to 82. Right. And you worked throughout this period for the Canadian Grain Commission.
Yes.
On the way staff?
Always on the way staff, yes.
Yeah. You would have liked to be an inspector, but...
No. After I got on there, I liked the way staff because you could move about the elevators. You weren't restricted to an office, eh?
Oh,
so
yes.
You could go wherever.
And in how many different elevators did you work?
All of them.
All of them. How many would all have been in your time of work?
Oh, gosh. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
14 elevators.
14.
Of course, some of them belong to what company?
Well, there were different
companies. Sasspool would have a number
of them. Sasspool, Grain Growers, Richardson's, P&H, yeah. Cargill.
Yes. Right. So, what kind of work did you do then as a on the way? Staff of the Grain Commission. You already said something about boxcars. So any what?
Yeah, it varied depending what shift you were on. And like if you were put on boats, well then you just kind of tended to the boats or helped out with the cars or whatever. If you were on cars, well, if you were the early morning person, well you would go in and get your car numbers and sound your cars and make up shunts for the, you know, the order of the cars to be dumped and stuff like that. And
That was part of your responsibility, actually, to direct the shunting locomotive people then, wasn't it?
Yeah, to
or
the
whatever
elevators.
Equipment.
Yeah, yeah. And then when I first started, we didn't weigh the cars. We had a weighman there then, you know. Like I said, it changed lots. Eh?
Yes. This is a weighman from the Grain Commission or from the
no,
elevator?
Grain Commission.
The Grain Commission.
Yeah.
Right.
And then after they dumped the cars, then you had to make sure that all the grain was accounted for. Like, you know, like there was no spills in the basement and that the hopper had been empty after the car was dumped. And that the car was empty, you know. Yes. And then this if the car wasn't empty, well then, you know, you had to fill out a report for it. And
you why know, would a car not be empty sometimes?
Well, sometimes they would just miss a compartment of grain if it was a tanker or box car, not give it the extra shake, you know, and leave grain in the corner and stuff like that. Or
and so you'd actually do physical inspections, you'd look at them.
Yeah, and then we had a, if it was a box car, then we had to go in there and do a dust line, which, you know, when grain would be like this, so we had to kind of level off with our line's eye where the grain would be, and then we took measurements all around the box car, 12 different measurements, you know, and then we'd divide by whatever, 12. You know, and then we'd say how much grain was in that car, you know. Yeah, so maybe the grain, then there was seals on the door. If the seals were broken, you had to record that too, eh?
Sure. The weighing did involve actually a physical weighing of the box car or the hopper car, the tank car, I suppose, did it? Was it weighed full and then weighed again when it was empty? With the difference being the cargo or not?
It depends on what elevator. Like Richardson's had a scale that weighed before and after.
But Saskwell did. The others tended not to.
No.
So it was actually based on a physical estimate then.
Yes.
So that it's a, based on quantity first of all, and then you do a multiplier per number of bushels or pounds per. What was the end result? The quantity was done in bushels or metric tons? Or?
It was done in bushels when I first started there, in tons, and then they went to the metric system, which was tons. You know,
yes, so. Two N's and an E.
Yeah.
And when did that change take place, roughly?
Oh, gosh.
Mid-80s or even later?
I'm not sure now. That leaves me.
Did you have a conversion charts? Or
Yes.
Things one had to memorize.
That was part of our competition because every year we had to have a competition.
To be up to the measure again for this year.
Yeah.
And like one does forget things over the, what would it be over the winter, I guess. Things were, the slack time would be what, January through
January,
April?
February, March, yeah.
Yeah.
Until the shipping started, when the shipping started then.
Summer, on the other hand, late summer could be very, very busy.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's changed over the years. Like I said, it really changed lots. Like now in the winter, they do audits.
What does that involve?
Audits is where they weigh all the grain and grain products in an elevator. Right? They weigh them all over to balance the books.
I see. This and the Great Commission supervises that? Or actually does it?
Yeah.
Is it a service to the elevator companies then to have this done? Or to
no,
the
they
grain
have
company?
To pay for it.
Oh.
Yeah, they have to pay for it.
Now that's the wheat board that would be paying, would it? No, the elevator companies are paying for this service, are they? Is that the payment you meant?
The elevator pays to have the audit done.
Yes.
So I guess like they need extra staff because you have to seal bins.
Sure.
Top and bottom after it's been weighed, you know, and they pay for that service.
And are they... the information goes to the grain company then, I guess, does it?
Yes.
Now, is that the basis? Do they charge the wheat board then for the storage of the grain? I'm just wondering why they would do that.
You see, all the grain coming in is weighed by the Grain Commission.
Yes.
So we have a tally of what should be in that house, even though grain has gone out, because they keep track of outwards and inwards.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, maybe there's a whole loss of grain, and then the books don't balance, so where did that grain go? So if they're under, they have to pay because there's a loss of grain. Like
right. And if there's over,
like one time at Pool 4, somebody left a spout open, and the spout is put on for the next boat coming, and they just let everything go, and everything went right into the slip. That was a lot of, well, your dad probably told you about that. There was a lot of loss of grain. You know?
Grain right into the lake, into Thunder into
yeah,
the Bay.
Yeah, slip, yeah. So somebody has to, you know, the books have to be balanced.
Pay for that.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
And then, of course, a lot of them stole grain, too. So.
Who would steal grain? Or rather, how would it be stolen?
We won't go there.
Not the worker, surely. So I can't imagine a worker being able to steal any significant amount of grain. We won't go there then. Okay. Well, let's... I have this question here about a typical day on the job, and we'll talk about changes later on, so maybe I could ask you what a typical day on the job would have been like in the early years.
Very busy, like getting the cars and the seals, you know, seal numbers and stuff on the cars, and setting up for the elevator to start dumping, and then making sure the cars were all empty after, you know. And
you would be doing?
A lot of leg work, because, you know, a lot of them tracks were long, so you'd have to go and get the push in and back to the office and then back out to get the empties and, you know.
Would you find yourself on a specific day mostly or entirely at one place? Let's say the Richardson's elevator is the one I most recently walked through, so you might arrive there in the morning and look over the cars that were waiting to be unloaded. Would you be busy with the unloading and then the measuring and all of that? Would you be there through a whole day then at one elevator?
Yes, but then if they're short at another elevator, they'd move you.
Later in the day or
whatever? Well, whenever they, sometimes you're only in there for 10 minutes and you get the phone call that you have to drop everything and go to this other elevator because they'd be shorthanded or something, you know.
Yes.
And I guess a lot of moving around from elevator to elevator.
And the pressure on the on your dispatcher, whoever is making those decisions, would be based on what, the grain that was waiting to be unloaded, or would it be a matter of ship waiting out there to be loaded that would put the pressure on?
The office would have a list of who's supposed to be at a certain elevator, and if somebody called in sick or, you know, couldn't make it in, then there's a man short, and maybe there's an extra one at this elevator, so they shuffle them around.
Sure. And in this way, you could end up at maybe two or even three elevators on one day.
On one day.
Was there a policy of having you work at all the elevators in some kind of a rotation so you weren't just at one place or not?
Not really, but when the lineup came out, we always call it the lineup, they left you there for a while, like maybe 3-4 weeks, 2 months, whatever, and then they'd shuffle you.
Yes.
Early days, Port Arthur people stayed in Port Arthur, Fort William stayed in Fort William, but then coming on later, you got mixed wherever.
Yes.
You know.
Did this have anything to do with the transportation
maybe,
that people have
perhaps,
available?
I'm not sure. Maybe Bill would know that.
Yeah. So would you be expected to have a car available so you could?
Oh yeah, that was one of the things when they asked you.
A job requirement.
You needed a car.
Your own car, so you could hop in and be over at the other.
Yeah.
The next elevator.
Well, a lot of the elevators, the bus didn't go there, like Cargill. Yeah. There was no bus service out there, so you needed a vehicle to get there.
Yes. Yeah. And so you would be, you get out and walk the tracks, look over the cars of whatever sort was available. And did the cars have on the outside of them an indication of how much was in them then, or was that?
No, they had a capacity weight, but didn't mean that's what was in them.
No.
You know. But there was a ticket on the side of the car, right? You know, you'd pull that off with the...
Which gave some indication of what was inside.
Yeah.
Right.
It would give you the grain, the, you know, grade that was in there and the weight and where it came from, shipper and station and stuff like that.
Do you know who would put these tickets on cars? Would that happen at the prairie, the line elevator where the car was loaded?
Yes.
Yeah. And so... Because it's not so much sometimes it could be individual farmers who would be involved with loading a car, I guess, or providing the grain for a car, but it's really the agent at those line elevators who has the job of transferring the grain into the cars, I would think.
Yeah.
From my farm boy experience with Dad hauling to a Patterson elevator in
Calrose,
Manitoba. And so you'd have the tickets in hand, the information on your sheets, and you would then tell the fellow at the locomotive to... which cars to begin to. Did that involve sometimes shuffling them around? On what basis were they pushed in? Was it in terms of the kind of grain, the grade of the grain or not? Because I guess the grades would vary too on the cars sometimes, wouldn't they?
Yeah, well, I think at the beginning, I'm not sure, elevators took whatever, but coming on to the end, certain elevators only took certain grains, you know, and then it was railroad shuffled
Yes.
What grain to go where.
Because I guess the railway companies, CPR, for example, had its yard, and I guess CN must have had a similar yard. Maybe theirs was in the inner city area, I'm not quite sure. But I guess they would receive the cars initially and be making decisions about where to send them, preliminary to your looking at them.
Yeah.
The very first interview we did was with Roy Lamour, who worked for CPR out at Roslyn for years. And he was telling us about this back in the 70s, how they were doing it, or even in the 60s, I guess, because computerization began to come in the early 70s.
Yeah.
And so then once you'd have looked them all over, they would begin coming in, and then you would be there. How many way staff would there be involved with the unloading, let's say, of one car? Just one person? Or
at the beginning?
Yeah, let's say at the beginning.
Oh, gosh, probably two or three, depending what elevators. Like, I'll take 7A, the biggest elevator
cool
on the waterfront at Intercity.
Right.
There would probably be five track people. There'd be a wayman, two waymen sometimes. Yeah, because the scales were upstairs, and there would be two waymen. So probably about seven, and then a wayman in charge would be about eight people.
All grain commission
staff
involved.
Yeah. But now you go there, and one man's doing it all.
Yeah, because so much of it's been computerized.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or maybe two. Sometimes, you know, they'll have one getting the push in,
yes,
and the other one weighing off the cars, eh? And if they're short, then
yes,
you have somebody to do the leg working.
Right. And so you're involved in getting it moving within the elevator. Is the way staff involved at further points, or are there other people who take over then as it gets upstairs?
The elevator takes over, right?
Yes.
Like on the D floor, that's the distributing floor. We call it the D floor, you know, where
sure,
the spouts are moved to bin the grain, and then it goes out to the annex on a belt, and then it's binned out there. And
it's one of those triumphs of engineering to get all of this going to the right place.
Yeah.
And waste staff are also involved then at the other side, the loading of ships, I guess.
The boats,
are they?
Yeah.
Yes. And waste staff are supervised that as well. Then.
Yes. There would be a wayman, shipping wayman, and then assistant.
Just a couple of people, even at the beginning. Two people could do that at the time. Then,
yeah.
Could they? Yeah. And
and then the assistant wayman, which, like, I assisted on boats because I wasn't a wayman to ship to the boats. You just make sure that all the grain is going to the boat.
Into the right hold, I suppose.
Going to the right hold on the boat, and that the scales are working properly. There was different parts on a scale that you checked.
How does the scale for loading a ship work?
Same as inwards. And they look exactly the same.
It's in the elevator building, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
They can hold like 65 ton. Like, they're huge. They're about almost the size of this room here.
A huge tank.
Yeah.
And it actually does a physical...
And then we check for the tie rods. There's tie rods in them, because if there wasn't, or if they were broke, it would collapse in its face. So there's rods in there. Sometimes
right,
it's chains, you know.
Sure.
And then there's feet, safety feet, make sure that it doesn't hit the floor, and equalizer damper, and, like,
right,
there's parts that
yes,
we had to check.
Every day?
Well, just when we were loading the boat.
Sure.
To make sure that, you know, all the grain was accounted for, eh?
Yes.
Make sure the spouts were on the right shipping bins, eh?
Because for the satisfaction of everyone, person who's chartered the ship, I guess the crew of the ship don't matter, care as much about this, but the person who's buying and so on and so forth, the seller of the wheat board and so on, the way staff's supervision of this is the key point. It's at that point that you know what weight of what kind of grain is going into the ship.
Well, that was the inspection side, what was going into the boat. But although when I did, I assisted on the boat, I always checked the grade.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if they're supposed to be shipping wheat and there's canola coming down the belt, well, then I knew there was a problem, you know.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
You'd cut it off.
And then there was a while we had to go on the boats and check them before they loaded them, eh?
To be sure that... Did the way staff or did the inspection staff take
No,
that
we
over?
Had to.
The way staff would be sure that the
what
holds
happened
were empty.
What happened there was, I guess the insurance companies for these boats... especially one in particular, was always short grain when they got to their destination. And so when that boat, particular boat came in, we would go on it at the first elevator, and we'd check all the tunnels,
yeah.
in the bottom of the boat and everything, and if it was clean or dry or wet, or you know, we had to make a documentation on it. And if they only went into one and two holes, well, after they were finished at that elevator, we went back in and we checked those, you know, everything's fine. Or if there was grain spilt on the floor or, you know, in the gates in there. And then it would go to another elevator, and then before they'd start loading there, the grain person would go on again.
Yes.
And they'd say, well, there was no grain, everything was clean. So then we knew then they were starting the belt and throwing it over the side, you know, the clean up or whatever. And then when the boat was completely finished, and then we'd go on and we'd document all the holes, if there was grain or no grain.
Yes.
And then when it got to its destination, with all this grain everywhere, and it got there, and then we'd send somebody there to check it, and there was no grain. So then we knew then what they were doing. So insurance company really clamped down on them after
a while. So what was the crew of the ship doing? They were throwing the stuff overboard?
Well, they wanted to keep it clean, I guess, you know, in the holes in the bottom, eh?
Get rid of their cargo? That's one way to keep it clean. But,
yeah.
But the person who's chartered the cargo, that particular voyage, isn't going to be pleased if no grain comes.
Well, the insurance companies were really getting ticked off at them.
Who was doing this?
I think it was the Halifax, it was called. The name of the ship, it was the Halifax.
There's one particular ship that was given?
Well, there was a couple of them, but I remember the Halifax was one of them. It was an older boat, you know, should have been taken out of service maybe
yes.
years before. Right?
Was it doing a down lake or down?
Yeah.
It wasn't doing an international trade?
No, down the lakes,
no.
Yeah.
So they were finding this, what, at Montreal when the ship came in?
Yeah, well, I think just the eastern ports there, just down
yeah.
the lake, you know.
Wherever it came in.
Yeah.
Well, that's a rich phenomenon. So they were leaving the grain, what, at Lake Superior then, feeding
well,
the fish?
Well, I'm not sure.
Who knows?
I had heard a rumor that they put the boom over on the side of the bank one time, you know, and dumped a bunch
just
of
dumped
there.
It on shore somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. That didn't happen very often, I don't suppose,
Well, this particular boat, it seemed every time they were short. So that's why we started.
Makes one think that they may have been in cahoots with someone who needed grain at a feeding livestock or somewhere, that they did an unloading somewhere that was...
Maybe, I'm not sure.
The captain was getting it. Attempted in Halifax, it wasn't a haul company ship. It was probably an independently owned ship. There's no one with a big operation would tolerate that sort of thing, I wouldn't think. Anyway, back to the importance of what you were doing. The way staff was central to being, to everyone's being sure that what the farmers had grown and would be paid for ultimately by the wheat board was actually moving through and getting to market, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You were at a central point in ensuring that.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I remember one time you missed a car that you didn't check a car that was after it was loaded. You had to call the railroad and they would go and check it for you. It was so important to get that car sounded
yes.
empty.
Right. So you mentioned if you'd go back physically and look at every one of the cars after...
Well, we sounded them. We had a stick gate. We used to hit the bottoms of them. Make sure
okay,
were,
on the
know.
Tank cars.
Yeah.
And depending on the ring of the sound, you know
and
whether
the,
there's something
in there.
And
then the box cars, you had to get there before the grain door man closed up everything. Maybe.
Yes.
Put all the wires and everything into the door and closed it up, so
right.
you had to get there and check them before they did that.
Yes. Yeah, it would be a fairly physical job, all right. You'd
yeah, there was a lot of walking.
On your feet all day or
yeah.
for much of it and so on. So that would be a typical day on the job, and their change. We can talk about changes further later in this interview, I suppose, but you made some reference. The questions asked in regard to this were, what did you do? Well, you've described that. Who did you interact with? You were clearly interacting with, well, the grain companies, the elevator
crew. The elevator personnel, yeah, and then the inspection, because sometimes, you know, you needed to know what grade was in that car. Because sometimes there's a pattern, eh, if it's from the same shipper and station and grade, you know, so you go and back up there with, because they had the tickets off of the car for their bag
right.
samples. Eh?
Right, they ended up in the hands of the inspection
yes.
staff.
Yeah.
So the Grain Commission staff had in an elevator would be the way staff and the inspection staff.
At every elevator, yes, there was
yeah.
a government staff.
Those were the two government
yeah.
groups of government staff there.
Yeah.
And The inspection staff was entirely supervisory then. They were providing the ultimate assurance that...
They had an inspector in charge, yeah.
Yeah. Did you have much interaction with the elevator workers, the grain handlers themselves, or?
Yeah, you do all of them. Yeah. They were all pretty friendly, and yeah.
One of the interesting things about it is you were there in a non-traditional person in
yeah.
in a very traditional.
Yeah,
kind
well,
of
it
work.
It was difficult at first.
How
really
many
was.
Of you would have been women? Were you the only woman? On
oh
there?
No, probably was. I'm going to say 10, 12, 15, maybe when I went on the job.
Out of 80 or 90 or?
169. I'll say maybe 20 women.
So that would still be about 10% then. Oh,
yeah.
A bit over 10%.
Yeah.
And you were a novelty in the elevators when you arrived, I'm sure. Were you one of the first to arrive? Or
not the very first. I'm not sure when women came on, because Gail said she came on when? 78.
So it would have been half a dozen years earlier that,
yeah.
Mm. Whereas the elevator crews were entirely male, I guess, in those
yeah.
days. There wasn't a woman, a secretary in the office, perhaps, but
yeah.
They, everyone knew how to behave, I suppose. Did you find yourself experiencing harassment particularly or not? Course. You were
not,
government.
Not really, because I grew up mostly with boys, you know, and yeah. when I could take it and dish it out back to them, so I didn't run
no.
and say, I'm going to report you, because, you know, you just...
Give it back and have them back off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I there was a few I just stayed away from because I didn't feel comfortable around them.
No. That makes sense.
But I didn't anyway associate with everybody, because if I worked in the car shed, it was mostly just those guys I got
sure.
to know. Because
yes.
when you first came on the job, you didn't do boats. I was there for maybe a couple of years before I did boats.
Right.
So I didn't know who was upstairs.
Yes. So. It also wonders about tools and equipment that you use. You've mentioned the measuring the boxcars and
yeah.
tapping the tank cars and so on.
Yeah,
the
flashlight. You always carried a flashlight.
To be
hard hat, work boots.
Right, and the weighing equipment, of course, as you said, would vary with Richardson's having honest to goodness scales, and the other places you were sort of estimating what the quantity was. Grain varies in weight, of course, doesn't it? Wheat being what heavier, certainly than barley or oats.
Yeah.
Did you handle primarily wheat or? You mentioned canola, of course,
well,
coming.
We handled everything, or I worked with everything, yeah.
You became familiar with. How much instruction were you given before you started in the way of preparing you for what you would be finding, what you'd be weighing?
You mean on this course that I took, or when I got to the elevators?
Well, yeah, the course, first of all. The Grade Commission had a course for you.
Well, the course I took, Introduction to Non-Traditional Occupations.
No,
just
not that way.
Not that one?
No.
Okay.
Well,
the
actually, in that, were there parts that were really... What did they instruct you in that course, actually, in the broadest kind of terms?
Just the difference in wages that men made with... compared to women in those days,
oh, yeah.
you know? I mean, women worked for next to nothing.
So it started with that.
Yeah.
Here's
and
a chance
a union,
to make a man's wage.
And then a union. I mean, we were never familiar with working for a union, you know, in those
right.
places that they were sending us to were all unionized.
Right. And you and the Grain Commission also had a union?
Yes, union. Yes.
Yes.
And then the instructor at the college had a list of places that was willing to take us.
Right.
Because, you know, they had to make arrangements for us and how many they could take on the job training.
Right. I guess this would be the kind of instruction that might sometimes be called life skills
mm-hmm.
instruction,
yeah.
or would you add to that?
The course I took?
The course at the college.
Yeah, it was an eye-opener. It was different than what I was used to doing, because
yeah.
I was a homemaker in Grandview Lodge in the kitchen and that kind of, you know, work I was doing, eh?
So that's what you'd done beforehand.
Yeah.
And you knew about the kind of wages people earned there.
Yes. And how hard the work was.
Yeah, I dare say. Harder than being on waitstaff.
Oh, yeah.
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 Okay. And then you had instruction, of course, by the Grain Commission itself on what you would be having to do.
Well, they showed you around. Like, you went, I went to Pool 1, that's where I went. And I went to Pool 1, and they showed me around. But these buildings are so big, and I had never seen a scale that big in my life. I mean, you know, a little scale.
In the kitchen.
Yeah, and then there's parts, tell the difference between what workers, like elevator workers and Grain Commission workers, was something that, you know, you had to learn how to do. And then sometimes I'd get lost just trying to find my way back to the office. I'd get turned around in the door and a cleaning machine, and wouldn't know where I was. So it was a learning experience, you know.
So a good deal of it was sort of learning on the job with
the
other Grain Commission staff watching you and instructing you in things and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
You weren't involved in grading, or were you?
No, that's
because that was another skill.
But there was parts
of
the job where it was really boring. Like, after you did your push-in and you got all your numbers and everything, and you waited for like a few cars to be dumped, and then you go check your empties, you know, take a walk down the track, and it would be maybe an hour or two, and you just sat there like, well, what do I do now? Because I was always used to working and doing stuff, you know. So.
Yes. And then some more cars would arrive, or?
Well, we'd have a noon push-in usually at noon, so then you're busy again doing another push-in, you know, more empties. And a lot of them had shifts on then, you know, so you're getting ready for the 4-12 to come in and relieve you. And
sure. Your work day was 8 hours, 10 hours? 12?
Well, you were scheduled for 8 hours. But if the elevator decided they were going to dump cars at night and they needed staff, then we had to...
You just carry on.
You just carry on.
Right.
Same thing with boats. I mean, if you're on schedule for boats for a week and the boat doesn't come in till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and, well, you're there till midnight, because they used to ship till 4 to 12.
And overtime was paid, or it was just a longer work day?
No, it was time and a half after 8 hours.
Okay, well, that makes it more tolerable.
Yes, and double time on Sunday.
Even more tolerable. What might interest or surprise people most about the work that you did? If you were to think back over it from the perspective of people who have maybe never been in an elevator, even.
Yeah, it's, I think how huge they are, and the how the grain has moved about. That's when my brother and sister came to visit me from the East Coast, they had never seen an elevator before. They thought an elevator was in like a high-rise building.
Well, that is one kind of elevator, but it usually doesn't handle grain.
But I took them to Pool 1, it was in the middle of the winter, and he couldn't get over how cold it was in there. Like, the cement is cold, and, you know. And I didn't find it cold at all. Of course, he worked in a bakery. And he said, well, you can have your elevator and I'll keep my bakery. And I said, well, I can't stand the heat, you know.
Right.
But they were just amazed at how, and I tell them, well, the grain comes in the car shed here and it's dumped into the pit and it goes up a leg. Well, what's a leg, you know, with buckets? And, you know, I took them through the whole thing, and they were just amazed at this operation.
And you were moving the stuff that would be ground so that he could bake bread.
Yes.
Yeah, so that it was a vital connection for him, actually, and all of this astounding stuff.
Oh, he liked it, but he said it was too cold for him.
Because there's really no heating in the elevator.
The only heat is in the offices.
Right. Because
they don't need heat in the bins or out in the annexes. Or.
So sometimes in December, you'd begin looking forward to freeze up, I suppose.
Yes, toes and fingers and nose. And,
part of dressing for the job.
Okay.
What are you most proud of in the work that you did?
I think the honesty of it, you know, that I was able to catch some spills and report it and stuff like that, and find some leaks in bins and leaky hoppers and stuff like that, you know.
Right, and the honesty of it, one could expand on the fact that, as I was suggesting earlier, your work was vital to ensuring everyone from the farmer who was selling
to the
person buying somewhere, and everyone in between,
that
exactly this much wheat had moved through. And, did you ever think about how the whole system came to be, how the Grain Commission developed, or were you told about that?
I was told that it came about because of the farmers weren't getting paid for the grain that they were shipped. There was a lot of grain missing in between the farmer and the buyer. So that's how the Grain Commission came about, and also for the inspection staff. You know, if you sent two red and you're getting paid for, you know, something different and, you know,
something
the
less.
Integrity of it, eh? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and so you would have thoughts about reducing this function these days, I guess, because there's some of that going on, isn't there? In fact, there's a bill in Parliament dealing with the Grain Commission, is there not?
Yeah. They want to do away with the Grain Commission.
Yeah. What do you think of that? Struggling for printable language, are we, Pat?
Well, it's changed lots, eh? It's changed lots. It's big corporate farmers now, eh? It is no more little farmers to worry about. It's big corporations.
Yeah.
And they own the farm, they own the grain, they own the boats, they own, you know what I mean? Like, they own the whole thing.
Yeah, certainly.
And it's all weighed on the prairies. It's all weighed and it's all graded there. You know,
right.
It's duplicate work.
It can't be, certainly, if a large corporate operation has been paid by someone who has acquired it. Conceivably, if Cargill is buying it, then presumably their own staff could be dependent upon to assure the corporation that what has been bought has moved through and so on. I guess when corporate farming develops to that extent, I suppose that's true. But it is really the small farmers. Where the individual operators aren't all good.
There's not many of them left.
You know, there certainly has been enormous reduction in
yeah.
in all of that.
Yeah.
Well, let me see. I don't think that I have to ask you about the contribution you're making to Canada's successes in the international grain trade. I mean, we were just saying that really in terms of its role. Nor the connection to the between your work and the work of the farmers growing the grain. You've indicated that as well, really, in terms of the unless you wanted to add anything to that.
No.
Did you ever see farmers?
I have a friend that lives on the
farms on
a
the
friend, a girlfriend that I went to school with. She's married to a farmer.
Where is that?
In Austin.
Oh, in Austin.
Yeah.
Have you visited them?
I was there in September.
Did they take you to see the museum?
No.
For shame.
I hear it's interesting, yeah.
Marvelous collection of old steam engines and farm tractors and so on and so forth. If you're there in the summertime, they also have this, what do they call it, a farmer's, it's not an exposition, but they're competitions and so on and so forth. And some of the tractors are running.
I'll get to see it next time
or
when I'm out there. When I was there in September, I was...
Which would be closed down, I
was coming out of Winnipeg Hospital, so I was... recuperating.
Right,
so,
and not like, walking around very much. No. No, I come from Manitoba and I've visited the place a number of times. You talked about major changes, or changes along the way. Would you want to sort of, there's changes obviously in the rolling stock of the railway companies, changes in computerization.
Cuts down on a lot of jobs. And well, they did away with just the boxcars alone. I mean, they used to, you know, have a lot of elevator guys for a boxcar. You had one, a hook man, a door man, a dumper man, you know what I mean? So that was a lot of...
Whereas once the tanker cars came in...
It was simpler. And then they had the automatic openers, you know.
So the one person could sort of supervise the machinery opening the
car. Yeah, and then when I first started, we had to check every car after to make sure that it was empty. And then... almost coming on to the end now, it's just like you get your weight off of your... they don't even have tickets on the cars anymore. It's all put in the computer. And if you've got a tank car coming in with 90 tons and you get 90 tons out of it, you're not even checking the car anymore because you got the weight you're looking for. You know.
Yes.
So, but I mean, who's to say there wasn't an extra 10 in that car?
Well, you should be there to
yeah.
say that.
Yeah.
it gets computerized to the extent of it actually not physically checking it. Of course, if the elevator company doesn't have, or if the terminal elevator doesn't have weigh scales like the ones on the Richardson ones, then it does become impossible to be sure.
Yeah, but the way those ones at Richardson's, yeah, I guess you've seen those ones at Richardson's.
I have seen, I don't remember them clearly.
But the thing is, you know, with those cars, they come in and the ends of them could be full of stuff. You know, like they throw all kinds of stuff on the ends of those cars, like old motors and picnic tables and, like, you name it, and grain gets spilt on there, like rotten grain, you know. I mean, that makes weight that you're looking for in that car, and it's all on the ends, which is junk, you know. So you have to visually check those ends of the cars.
You found cars with old engines in the end?
Oh, yeah, all kinds of stuff. Like, when you're doing the pushing, I always have a look at the ends of them to see there's anything on the back of them, eh?
Now, who would have?
Because sometimes when they load these cars now, the way they load them, it's like they don't stop. They just continually load them from, you know, these spouts.
Yes.
And then the backs of the cars sometimes gets all filled up because they don't move the cars fast enough for that spout to go into the next car.
Yes.
So
this would be the tanker cars you're describing.
Yeah, so then there's
now
a grain loss there, you know.
Yes. So you found a boxcar with an old engine at the end of it?
Well, the end of it, yeah. Not the boxcar, the tanker, yeah.
I see.
Like an old motor, I guess, off the farm or something. I don't know.
But anything put on a car is designed to add weight to it.
That's
car,
right, yeah.
Which would, at some point or other, that car would be being weighed, I suppose, would it?
Yeah, well, when it got to Richardson's with those kind of scales, it's weighed on there with that, you know.
Yes.
One time I was at Pool 3 and doing a noon push-in, and I'm at the back of the track by the lake, and all of a sudden this guy is there. And I thought, where did he come from? And you knew he wasn't an elevator worker because he didn't have hard hat, work boots, or anything, eh? And he's asking me where he is. Now, what do you mean where you are? But he came
cargo.
In on the...
Cargo.
Yeah, he came in on the back of the car, eh? And he's all disoriented, eh? He doesn't know what city he's in and how to get out of here.
Stay on the car, friend. Did you head back? It's heading back.
No, it was pushed in to be dumped. He would have had to wait for a day or two for it to go
before he could head back out.
Yeah.
Well, those are interesting things. Are there any other major changes that you'd like to focus on?
No, it's just that there's a lot of changes from when I started to now, and there's not much of a job left anymore, you know. And a lot of computer work now, eh? A lot of different programs on the computer, and and that's about it.
You would remain proud of the work that you did.
I do, yeah.
But you wouldn't recommend it to anyone starting out now. It was a good thing in its day, which was the better part of a century. This work dates back to the Laurier era, I think, when the farmers had the impact on government to say, we need a square deal and you better be sure we're getting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. In addition to the changes that have taken place, did you face other challenges on the job?
Yeah, the weather was, weather.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, like, you know, the storms and you're up to your knees and snow getting push-ins and cold, you know. Sometimes you had to be on car shed duty. You always had somebody in the car shed, and be really cold. And
yeah, those car sheds the wind would howl.
Oh, like a tunnel effect, you know, going through there. And then if you're upstairs on a boat and you can't leave the gallery because or the annex, you know, because of the grain movement, then they're going to shift soon, you know, the trip, and so you'd have to wait around there. And sometimes you'd have to go to the bathroom, and you couldn't go. And you know, there was, and then the dust, and wearing glasses, you'd put those goggles on, and they all fog up, and you couldn't see where you're going. And
did you have dust masks of any sort? Did you have them from the beginning?
No, and the earplugs too, not from the beginning, no. But I'm lucky with the hearing. Like, a lot of the guys lost their hearing, you know, with the noise and the squeaky brakes and stuff like that on the trains. I have no sense of smell. So because I have no sense of smell, I got extra hearing. Like, I can hear people in my building on the third floor. That's
extra sensitivity there. Right?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And yet I shouldn't have any hearing.
No, no
I should be stone deaf.
Were you given advice by the commission itself in terms of clothing? Where you weren't issued clothing, I don't suppose. You had
not
to
at the
it.
Beginning. At the end, we were issued parkas and work gloves. But I mean, the work gloves were too big because, you know, a woman's hand is small, and they'd give you men's gloves, and you know.
They didn't have women's sizes.
Well, they did, but they were still too big, and they were, you know, stiff and.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just not.
And then they give us a boot allowance to coming on to the end. You know, you're allowed, I think, a pair of boots every year or every 2 years, something like that.
Now, you need the steel toes, I'm sure. Oh,
definitely. Green patch, yeah.
Insulated as well, preferably, but I bet that they had more steel toe than they had insulation in them. Yeah. Or were they well insulated as well?
Well, they were insulated to a degree, but I mean, they were still cold. And steel on your toes, it's no matter.
Yeah.
They're cold.
You could take cold better than other people, I suppose.
Yes.
You preferred cold to heat.
I preferred a cold to heat, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, against the kitchen, which would be mighty hot. I can well imagine by the way of contrast. Are there any other challenges that you'd want to mention about doing the work?
No.
Or major challenges the industry face that you might want to recognize?
Well, it's very political, eh? And you know what I mean? The government changes and stuff like that. And I don't think I'll get into the political side of it, but it is a political game that's being played. And lots of politics on the game, eh? On the job. Eh?
Right. Were you much involved with the union?
No, I went to the meetings.
Sure.
And unions are good and unions are bad. And I don't know if I should say this, but...
What would you say is the good thing about unions, or are good things?
The good things is because they negotiate for you for the contract, you know, and you get your raises, not necessarily on time, or always a year or two behind getting retroactive pay. And the bad things is that they protect the people that don't do their job, and then you have to cover for them.
Did you find some of that in the way staff or?
Yes.
Slackers on the job? Yeah. Did anyone ever get fired?
No.
There were people who should have been. Yeah. I tend to think of that as a management failure, having been management briefly and having terminated someone once in that brief period of time. I think that a good management knows how to deal with problems.
So they got in the union, and then once they're in the union, it's like it's hard to get rid of them then.
It's because we're difficult, unless they cooperate by really slacking off or something.
Yeah. Pool 7, before I left there, this is the elevator talk, it's not Grain Commission talk, and this guy, they wanted to get rid of this guy, and he was one of the newer hirees, and they went after the shop steward, and he said, "You knew what he was like when he first came on. Why did you let him 90 days and then get in the union? Now I can't do anything about it." He says, "You should have fired him then."
Yeah, well, that is true. But if there are expectations of what people will do, and you could document his failure to do so, you build a case for letting him go.
Well, they eventually did. I mean, the guy was so out of it on drugs that he was going to kill himself or kill somebody else, you know, with cables and cars and the car shit. I mean, it's dangerous work.
So he was ultimately let go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Eventually,
took a while.
It took a while to get rid of him. Yeah.
Yeah. This can be seen as one of the downsides that trying to protect workers against.
Well, the elevators. There's a safety issue. I mean, they're not the safest place to work.
No.
And then you have the possibility of them blowing up.
Yes.
You know, you get overheated bins, and they'll blow up.
Right.
Pool 4. You ever at pool 4?
Yes.
Do you remember the floor in 7B?
No.
Or 4B? It was round like this. And I remember walking when I was doing assisting on boats when I first started there. And I asked somebody, "Why is it that floor is like this?" And they said, "Well, that's a bin lid you're walking on." And I said, "But why is it all..." And they said, "Well, it blew up."
With enough force to bend the steel of the floor.
Not the floor, the top of the bin. See, when you're upstairs, you're walking on.
Well, so I mean, what was the floor up there was the roof of the bin, and it pushed
that. Yeah, you're
walking
on bin lids.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you Were you ever in danger that you were conscious of it this way?
Grain dust sometimes really bothered me. Like, you know, sometimes you couldn't see because it was so bad.
It was still that bad in the 80s, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then fires made my knees buckle. I would walk like this with my knees, you know, because when I saw a fire, especially flames, and I knew that, you know, for an explosion, I mean.
Yes.
And some of the elevators are very lax. They never thought anything of it. It's just, they just,
what would the fires be of?
A trip overheated.
Okay.
A trip moves along the belt, you know. And,
okay.
And grind and metal on metal, I guess, and then a little bit of grain dust there or whatever, and it caught fire.
Yeah, I would be anxious too.
Yeah.
Never did create an explosion in you.
No.
When you were there.
No.
You were grateful for that. Yeah. Did you come away from this with health problems other than your nose?
Not that I know of so far, no.
Do you think the nostrils are a result of working in the grain trade?
Probably.
Or is it just a matter of congenital?
I really don't know, but I can smell cigarette smoke, or I can smell smoke. It's the only thing that I can smell. Or something that's really strong and out of the ordinary.
Yeah,
but then I don't know what I'm smelling. Like if somebody has a cleaning agent in the hall, and I'll say, what am I smelling? What is that smell? You know, it's different.
Yeah.
I can smell it.
Yeah,
but it's
got to
be really, really strong.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, what are your most vivid memories about the job?
Oh, the fun ones?
Why not the fun ones first?
Oh, gosh. They had a jack ladder, and I didn't know what a jack ladder was.
You better tell all of us.
Do you know what a jack ladder is?
We don't know either.
It's like a belt that goes up and down, and it just went for the workhouse, and it just went on the upper floors. And I thought it went, and it's got a place you put your feet on, and a bar that you stand.
Right.
And it goes on a, you know, like a pulley. Yeah.
Sure.
So I thought it went from the top of the elevator to right to the bottom, like the floor. So I'm on there, and everything, like I said, everything's new, and I'm going along, and I'm looking around. Oh, look at this, look at that big board. I wonder what that is. You know, it's all new to me. Well, all of a sudden, when it comes down, this board goes around and goes up the other side, and it threw me on the floor.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking I'm going right to the bottom. So I got up, and I thought, oh, and I looked around. My hard hat fell off and dusted myself off, and I'm wondering, did anybody see me? You know, I felt embarrassed, but there was nobody around, eh?
Yeah.
So
that was the place to get off it.
I should have gotten off, but I
because
thought
it,
that
it,
thing
it had
was
turned
going right,
rode all the way down. I
thought it was going right to the bottom of the elevator, like right to ground floor. But
yes.
It only went at the top three floors, or the four floors at the top.
It was an easy way to get up to the top, I
yes.
guess.
Yes, yes.
How did you get down? Not on the same thing, surely. Once you were at the top, how did you get back down?
Well, then you could get on and get off of this thing, because it went continually.
I see.
There was a board that you stepped on,
so,
and a hand.
And there were hand holds in both directions. So that,
well, the hand thing was on the belt.
Yes.
But it just kept going.
But I'm thinking that when it flips over, it goes back
down.
Yeah,
the board just...
Then,
yeah,
then you'd be reaching up for a different one.
Well, I didn't reach. I fell.
Well, yes. So that would be a vivid memory.
That was one of my first memories, yeah.
And you still call that a good one.
Well, yeah, that was...
You survived.
Yeah. It was a learning thing, yeah. Another one was because I was working at Grain Growers, and it's so loud, that elevator, because if they have these fans over the car shed, and I had the door open. I worked midnights, and I'm getting ready for my relief to come in the morning. And Rennie Bannon, I don't know if you know him, he was such a card. And you can't hear anybody coming in because of these fans, and I'm watching the cars going and ticking off my book what's happening. So anyway, Rennie come in, and I'm not expecting him, it's like 10 after 7, and he comes in, and he shouts at me, and I guess after midnights or whatever, not expecting, and he's big, and I started screaming, like, and I couldn't stop, so he had to come and slap my face, like, stop it, why'd you do that, you know, so every time I saw him after that, it was the same thing.
You were slapping him in the face each
time? No, he was slapping me, because they kept me out of the shock state I was in, eh? We still laugh about it. I mean, that's like how many years later. You know?
So the surname suggests he was someone from the Fort William First Nation.
He was.
Were there some number of status Indians working for the
Yeah, I think there was a few. Yeah, Rennie stayed with it and retired from there.
This was Green Commission's staff,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because your employment, too, would have been part of what in Canada was called the Employment Equity Program, wasn't it, to open jobs to make the workforce.
I think that came later, eh? Like, didn't that come later?
Well, my memory is that there was a parliamentary committee that had recommended.
Didn't that come in the
Rosalie Abella had recommended it. It was being discussed in the 84, summer of 84, because I was at a meeting with Jack Masters while he was still MP, talking about this. So it was just coming in about the time you were getting into the employment.
Yeah.
Through 84. And then gradually it was
then
later.
And more so into the 90s, I think.
Government began responding more actively to it. I don't know whether the Mulroney government not take it up very actively?
I don't think at the beginning, or else I never paid attention to it.
Well, you would have been conscious of it, because the employment of yourself and other women and the employment of Indians would both of them, I think, quite possibly be responses to this. The workforce, the Great Commission staff, should be more representative of the community. That was the basic principle.
Well, that's still, in fact, now, because now there's so many Italians in town now that the last time they hired a lot more Italians because they represent the community.
Oh,
yeah.
This is the Great Commission?
Yeah.
Oh, me darn. There was a day, of course, when those Italians were in the elevators. They were grain handlers, right? But there's so few jobs, so we have to make it up for them.
Yeah.
Now, that's a nice touch.
But they have lots of natives there now.
They do, actually. Good. Visible minorities otherwise?
Yes, we have a Vietnamese lady they hired about 5 years ago. Japanese.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a mixture.
So these would be other changes in the Great Commission staff then?
That's right, yeah. Mm. And since I've left now, they've hired a whole bunch, I think 20 young ones. I don't know any of them, so I don't know what they are.
How many of them are women or Indian
or
whatever?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, vivid memories, bad ones? Rennie Bannon, obviously.
Oh, Rennie Bannon, bad ones. Yeah, one time we had to check the boots in the basement for seals, because the slides on the seals had to be sealed, Grain Commission seals on them. And once a week we had to do inspections of the equipment. And I went down this ladder thinking that it was going to step into grain, but what it was water with the grain, and it rots.
Ooh.
It's got to be the most stuff that smells rotten.
As yucky
grain
as they come.
Yeah, I don't know if you're
familiar. Your nose was working that day.
Yeah.
Well enough.
And then when I got back in the office, they kicked me out, and I'm all mud up to almost my knees, my pants, my socks. I had to throw everything out. I just couldn't get it clean.
It wouldn't wash clean.
No, you couldn't get rid of that smell. It was just...
This was a ship that had not been properly cleaned, obviously. This was on the ship you were...
No, this was a boot in the basement of the leg.
I see.
Like when,
right,
you know,
yes,
before the grain started to be elevated.
Yes.
It was, you had to go down this ladder to get to the boot to make sure the seal was on there. Well, I didn't know. I thought it was grain I was stepping in because I had my light.
Yes.
But it was water with grain on top of it. So when I stepped down, I went down a little bit farther than what I should have into this rotten...
Probably fermenting.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where the grain is going.
Who knows? Yeah.
There was spills like everywhere. Belts spill, you know what I mean? Leaks, you know. So.
Yes. Well, that's where the elevator companies need to spend some of their money. Keeping staff,
well, when
ensuring
we would
that
find anything like that, we'd notify them, and they were pretty good at, you know, fixing up.
Oh, of course.
At the beginning, now they're kind of slack about it, sometimes.
Yeah.
Except if it's shipping, and if they're shipping and they're losing grain, they're on it right away.
Yeah. Everything else is not that important. What are the most important events that happened in the workplace during your career? Do you want to designate any of those?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's important to preserve and share Thunder Bay's grain trade history?
I think it is, yeah. It's too bad we can't preserve an elevator for tourists and get a grain car there and how the elevator works.
One of my friends used to work for Sask Pool, and he said that in purchasing, he said that he had tried to persuade them to set one of the elevators aside as a working elevator for demonstration purposes.
Pool One would be a good one. It's a nice elevator, and you know.
The smallest, I guess, that is
because
still
it's got
working.
A gallery to it. It's got shipping bins. It's got the whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
Some of them don't have shipping bins. They got direct spouting.
Right. Which is Pool One?
By Intercity, next to, there's Pool 7, the big one.
Right.
And then there's P&H. It's
right
next to P&H.
Oh, it's in
there. Where McCabe's used to be, you know McCabe's?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, right next there.
So that's the one. Advice for Nancy and company. Okay, well that, are there any questions that I should have asked that would you would have loved to answer?
No, I'll probably think of them when I leave here.
Well, let us know if there's a second interview we should do.
I think Bill will have lots for you.
Bill
got the politics of this job, Bill. No kidding.
Which of the governments was the best?
Which of the what?
Governments was the best.
In your, power?
Yeah, in your time
of
employment.
Oh, well, I ain't going there. No.
Best is, you know, that should be okay.
Yeah.
I didn't ask you which was the worst.
Oh, yeah. No, I'll leave the political side out of it.
Okay. Well, I think that could summarize it. We've been at it for about an hour, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And so thank you very much for coming in and agreeing to this. This began, after all, and you're seeing that ad that Nancy had put in the paper, and you called me to inquire what that was all about.
Yeah, well, friends at the elevator, yeah.
Oh, and you probably have a question to ask.
It's not a question, it's just an observation. I worked for Canada Manpower way back when, and I can remember the course.
Oh, yeah?
Into it, because we did a lot of referring to it.
That's right.
And in those days, it really was quite different. And it was in probably the late 70s, and maybe early 80s where I remember it, but women were just moving into the classic non-traditional occupations, such as the forestry industry and the elevators.
That's right, because I went out to McDevilling Bodell. They
right,
took us
okay.
to different places, yeah.
Yeah. And that course, I remember, was one of the first, one of the best ways of getting into non-traditional work, because they did a lot of the work in advance and opened doors. And it's very interesting to talk to somebody all these years after. It's
that
almost 30 years afterwards.
Yeah.
You tend to forget sometimes what the effect some of these little processes have in people's lives. I'm just interested in the course itself. What were the instructors? Do you recall their names at all?
It's funny you ask that.
Yeah.
I can picture her.
And
I probably have, because I got everything from that course at home still, and her name is probably still there, and she's just awesome.
Yeah, that would be interesting to even see that material and maybe even archive it.
So it was a woman who taught the course.
It was a woman that taught it, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll look it up and see if I can
find
it.
A lot of them got started in those areas, and basically were forerunners for what now would seem was quite natural back then. Was like Martians dropping in on
Yeah, and we went on a tour. Like we went to McMillan Bodell,
right.
We went to the hydro plant, we went to the sewer plant. I saw a lot of different plants, you know.
Yeah, and then they would give you a job placement afterwards.
Well, she had a list of places that would take us on the job training, you know, like the hydro. I think one woman got on the hydro that I know.
Yeah.
And then the elevators, inspection staff, waste staff, McMillan Bodell. I don't think anybody got on there, although they went there training. But and she told us where we might get on and where we couldn't, but there was different places where we could go, but not necessarily going to get a job. So I went kind of to a place where I thought, I want a job, you know. So.
And it worked out,
yeah.
Well, that's all I wanted to ask you. Thank you, Pat.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
It's nice to hear that, you know, I hadn't thought of that course for a long, long time until you mentioned it.
Kind of brought back some memories,
sure did,
eh?
Yeah, I was a much older person.
You were probably one of the ones that helped me to get into that course.
I may have been. Feverishly. I usually have my memory limit now is about 2 weeks, so I was. But I may have been. I was probably, if it was in the 80s, I was working out of Fort William in those days.
Yeah, well, that's where I was too,
office.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I'm trying to think where I was living. Someplace Gore Street, I think, in those
okay,
days.
Okay, well,
yeah.
You would have been in the same building as we on Sinicon Avenue, where the old Remy Canada building.
Yeah, in the back of Victoriaville,
that's
before
right.
Victoriaville was there, yeah.
There you go, our paths crossing.
Yeah, that's where I went to get into this course, yeah.
Did you have, was that something that you had planned on doing, or is it just kind of something you
how
planned
did that, oh, I know, a girl on the job, Sheila, another native lady that was on there ahead of me, she I think had taken that course and she got on and I was asking her about it and what the job and, you know, exactly what you do,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I thought, gee, I can do that job. It's not a hard job. I
yeah.
thought it was really something hard and complicated. The things of the job was the little things to know, not the physical labor of that job because it was nothing to
yeah.
it, but it was the little things you had to know, like the Canada Grain Act and the weed board and what they stood for, and like you had to know all that
yeah.
tones to pounds and pounds to tones, and don't ask me what it is now, but you know what I mean. We had to know those things,
yeah.
the little things, you know.
Yeah.
60 pounds to the bushel, and so on and so
yeah.
forth. Once upon a time.
Yeah. And I just have one more question, Ray. I'm sorry. It's just
that
sometimes you have to spring while the opportunity's there. Did you feel prepared for what you? Had to deal with for the first year or so, you know, given you know, the traditional aspects of the industry at that point?
The first year, yeah, I did. I really had a good supervisor, you know.
So they really took it.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was maybe a couple years later when it was, you know, and you seen some of the antics and some of the goings on. That,
the rules of that.
Yeah, well, I wasn't...
I mean, the antics in the Grain Commission and in the elevators, the work
well,
itself.
Well, some of the workers, I mean, I never come across those kind of people before, but
yeah.
like Gail and I were talking about,
yeah.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I never had to deal with those kind of people.
Yeah. Well, you hung in, so that's a good thing.
Well, I hung in, but there was many times I didn't want to.
Yeah.
Many times I came home crying, you know, is this still on?
Well, we'll wrap it up here, and now we'll... Okay, now you can talk.
But this light's still on.
Actually, I'm just getting that.
You can push the button.